So let Reese sleep as long as she wants.
Why do we have to go to school if Bone and Reese don't?
Little Earl was offended.
I don't know, and I don't care.
Temple sounded like she'd been married for 20 years.
All I know is you're going. If you want to argue with Mama about why, you can do it when she gets home tonight. Right now, I've got to get Tadpole ready to come home with me.
I took a piece of fat back to chew and went into the living room with the book I'd gotten from Aunt Raylene, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe by C.S. Lewis. I loved the story, but I was so tired I fell asleep, not waking up until Mama put her hand on my shoulder.
Where's Reese, Bone? Her voice sounded strange.
I think she's still asleep, Mama.
I pulled myself up off the couch and followed her into Alma's kitchen.
She dropped her purse on the kitchen table and sank heavily into one of the metal chairs. Her mascara was smeared under bloodshot eyes.
She sat quiet, looking at me. I couldn't read her expression.
Mama, did I do something wrong?
No, no, baby.
She shook her head, her eyes focusing on mine for just a moment before they looked past me.
It's not you.
She opened her bag, took out her Pall Malls, lit one, and began to rake her hair out with her other hand. I got her an ashtray.
You want me to make coffee?
No, baby. I sat down at the table. Is Alma still at Ruth's?
She nodded, paused, and looked at me directly.
Bone, your Aunt Ruth died early this morning. Her eyes glistened. I waited for her to start crying, but she didn't. She just sat there smoking. I looked at my hands. I couldn't believe what she had said.
Aunt Ruth was dead?
No. Mama cleared her throat.
Alma is still with Travis and Raylene.
I just came to get you and Reese. There's a lot to do.
So much, I can't even think yet.
I'm sorry, Mama. My voice cracked. I swallowed hard, wanting to cry but feeling no tears come. Even after all this time, I had not really expected Aunt Ruth to die. Everybody kept saying she would beat this, the way she had before.
Mama had talked as if this illness were just something that had to be gotten past, as if Ruth just needed time and quiet to get better. Everyone did. Then I remembered how thin she was when I stayed with her, how frail and weak. Her whole body shaking when she laughed, the way she looked at me when she asked me if she was dying.
I had known. Of course I had known.
It was death Aunt Ruth was thinking about all the time. Death was the reason she had talked so much, so intently. Death was the fire burning her up. With every breath and laugh and wiped away tear, she had been dying.
I had known that, but I had still imagined Aunt Ruth would go on, her dying something always still to come. The fantasy had been helped along by not seeing her every day as I had all summer. All these months, I had known what was happening over at that house. Known and denied it, because I could do nothing else.
Ruth was never pretty, you know.
Mama's voice surprised me. I looked up at the clock, but the light over the stove was off. There were half a dozen butts in the ashtray, and Mama's mascara had run even more. I licked my lips.
Aunt Alma said she was striking.
Oh, Mama shrugged.
Her fingers wiped her cheek, smeared the mascara back toward her temple.
That's what they say when a girl's got a strong face and ain't ugly, but ain't pretty neither. When we were little, I think Ruth would have given just about anything to be pretty. She used to stand in front of Granny's wardrobe mirror and stare at herself when she thought no one was looking. But I never teased her about it. She got enough teasing from the boys.
Mama ground her cigarette out. Truth is, she just about raised me.
Daddy was gone by then, and Granny was always running after the boys or your Aunt Alma, who was always getting herself in some trouble or the other. Ruth was the one that was there for me, that I could talk to. Once she told me that she liked to pretend I was hers. I was the baby, had just started school when she married Travis and moved down the road from us. She was over at our place almost as much as hers.
cooking for Granny and picking up after us. Travis used to get mad and come beating on the door, yelling for her to get her ass home to him. Mama pulled her lips in and bit the lower lip lightly. It was something I had seen Aunt Ruth do often. Something I did myself when I was nervous. Now it almost made me cry. I wiped at my own eyes, watching Mama use the back of her hand to wipe her eyes again. For some reason, Ruth didn't think she could have babies. When she got pregnant, she was so happy. It was a mystery to me why she liked having children so much. Seemed like everybody else whined and complained about it, but Ruth just took on so. Laughed and sang and made her own baby clothes. Then one time, I asked her why she acted so happy, and she just stared at me like I was just plain crazy. Told me it was proof. Being pregnant was proof that some man thought you were pretty sometime. And the more babies she got, the more she knew she was worth something. I just about cried, and at the same time I wanted to hit her for talking like that, talking like she wasn't worth something on her own, talking like my love didn't make her worth something. I remembered all the times I had stared in the bathroom mirror, knowing I wasn't pretty and hating it. I felt a cold chill go up my back, as if Aunt Ruth had just touched my spine. Mama was shaking her head, reaching to open her bag, rummaging around and pulling out a napkin. Carefully she dabbed under her eyes. Go get me some cold cream, Bone. Let me get some of this gunk off. I ran into the bathroom and grabbed the Noxzema jar. Reese was there, her hair all tousled and her eyes gummy with too much sleep. Why didn't you wake me up? She complained. Where is everybody? Everybody's gone, but Mama's here. Get cleaned up and come out to the kitchen. I hurried away. Mama would have to tell her. I couldn't. When I got back, Mama was still in the same position with the napkin under her eyes. But now she was truly crying. Big tears were spilling out and streaking down her face. I ran to her and threw my arms around her. For a moment we clung together, and then, awkwardly, she pulled her arms free and pushed me a little away. You loved her too, didn't you, Bone? She looked hard into my face as if she could see inside me. You know how much she loved you? I nodded. I couldn't talk. Mama hugged me to her, rocked me against her breasts. Her hands squeezed my shoulders and shook me a little. Oh, my little girl, Mama whispered. I wish I could be sure Ruth knew how beautiful she was. Chapter 17. Reese had never been to a funeral before, and I was unsure how we were supposed to behave. Reese was just worried about what we were going to wear. Don't we have to go buy black dresses? She kept asking. Mama, when we gonna go get our black dresses? She sounded as if she was already thinking about going to school the day after the funeral in her new black dress. Not so long ago, that was what I would have been thinking. Now all I could think about was Aunt Ruth and the way she had talked to me all last summer. When Mama shushed Reese and told her she could just wear her dark blue skirt and a white blouse, I went off to sit on the porch steps, hugging my knees to my chest. There was a tight, painful place inside me that squeezed me, not my heart, but just above my heart. I remembered the way Aunt Ruth had looked when she smiled at me, how thin she had been with her bird fingers and feverish eyes. But most of all, I remembered the way she had laughed with Earl, and then stared off into the distance all those long hours in the hot afternoons. Can we talk to each other or not? She had asked me. I had tried, but in the end I had lied. I hadn't told her that she was dying, hadn't told her the truth about my fear of Daddy Glenn. I hadn't told her that I knew what he was thinking when he looked at me, that I could see in his eyes not only confusion and anger, but something hotter and meaner still. I hadn't told her about the way he had touched me. I had been too ashamed. Mama thought that keeping me out of the house and away from Daddy Glenn was the answer, that being patient, loving him, and making him feel strong and important would fix everything in time. But nothing changed, and nothing was really fixed. Everything was only delayed. Every time his daddy spoke harshly to him, every time he couldn't pay the bills, every time Mama was too tired to flatter or tease him out of his moods, Daddy Glenn's eyes would turn to me, and my blood would turn to ice. I had never said that to Aunt Ruth. Never said it to anyone. I didn't know how. My head ached so bad I didn't even hear Daddy Glenn shout. I was still curled up on the porch when he stepped through the front door. "I was calling you, girl!" He grabbed me by the shoulder. He hadn't had time to shower yet, and his face was still sweaty, his uniform smelling of spilled milk. I looked up at him with hatred and saw the pupils of his eyes go small and hard. "I didn't hear you," I said plainly, coldly. "You damn well did." He pulled me up to my feet. "I didn't," I yelled at him. My blood was pounding in my head. "I didn't hear you. You ain't got no business calling me a liar." Through the open door, I could see Mama come out of the kitchen, wiping her hands on a towel. "Glenn," she called. "Glenn."
"You think 'cause your aunt died you can mouth off to me?"
Daddy Glenn was almost spitting with rage.
"You think you can say just anything you damn well please? You got another thing coming."
He dragged me into the house. Reese jumped up off the couch and ran for the bedroom. "Glenn," Mama called again, coming after us. But he didn't stop. My shoulder hit the door jamb as he pushed me ahead of him into the bathroom. I stumbled and would have fallen on the floor, but he was still hanging onto my arm. The door slammed behind us.
"Glenn, don't do this, Glenn!"
Mama's hands beat on the bathroom door. I stood, looking up at Daddy Glenn, my back straight and my hands curled into fists at my sides. His features were rigid, his neck bright red. He kept one hand on me while he pulled his belt out of its loops with the other.
"Don't you say a word,"
he hissed at me.
"Don't you dare."
No, I thought. I won't. Not a word. Not a scream. Nothing this time. He pinned me between his hip and the sink, lifting me slightly and bending me over. I reached out and caught hold of the porcelain, trying not to grab at him, not to touch him. No. 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 He was raging, spitting, the blows hitting the wall as often as they hit me. Beyond the door, Mama was screaming. Daddy Glenn was grunting. I hated him. I hated him. The belt went up and came down. Fire along my thighs. Pain. Had Aunt Ruth felt pain like this? Had she screamed? I would not scream. I would not. Would not. Would not scream. Afterwards, it was so quiet, I could hear my own heartbeat. Sound came back slowly. There were speckles of blood on the washcloth when Mama rinsed it. I watched, numb and empty. I was lying against her hip on their bed. The house was cold. From the radio came the low sound of Conway Twitty singing, "But It's Only Make-Believe."
"Why, honey? Why did you have to act like that? The funeral's tomorrow. Raylene's expecting us to help clean up at Ruth's before everybody goes back over there. Alma's baby's sick, and now..."
She put the cool cloth on my neck. "Bone, is it because of Ruth? Is that why you started yelling at Glenn?
Honey, you know you can't do that."
Her skin was so pale, the shadows under her eyes so dark. She had wiped her lipstick off, but there was a little blotch still on her chin. Her lips trembled. She lit a cigarette with shaking fingers, keeping one hand on my shoulder. I could feel the bones in that hand. I heard her whisper as if she were talking to herself.
"I just don't know what to do."
I closed my eyes. There was only one thing that mattered. I had not screamed. I spent the night before the funeral with Aunt Raylene over at Aunt Ruth's place, helping her clean things up a bit and cook a ham and two different casseroles, one with noodles and cheese, and one big vegetable mix with a cornmeal crust. Dee Dee had spent the evening locked in her bedroom playing the radio, and Travis was still down at the funeral home when Aunt Raylene made me go to bed. I woke up late and had to hurry to get a bath while Aunt Raylene cooked some biscuits and a pan of bacon. I'd been careful the night before not to let Raylene see the bruises on my legs when she had put me to bed in Butch's old room. She had been so distracted, she'd noticed nothing. This morning I had no appetite, but ate a bacon biscuit dutifully and drank the rest of Aunt Raylene's coffee while she finished getting dressed. Then I went out on the porch to wait for her. The radio was playing Get a Job by the Silhouettes, the chorus staccato and driven, echoing loud in the early morning. Dee Dee was sitting in the porch rocker in her nightgown with her hair still done up in pin curls. "I hate that damn hillbilly music. Always have," she told me conversationally while I stared at her. "You got to get dressed. Aunt Raylene is just about ready to go." I looked around for somebody else, but Uncle Travis's truck was still gone, and there was no one else there. Dee Dee looked like she hadn't slept. She was smoking an unfiltered Chesterfield, her hand trembling slightly as she sucked intently on it, and her eyes bloodshot and squinted against the sunlight. "But that's all the music Mama would ever play." She went on as if I hadn't said a thing. "Howling, yodeling, whining music, trashy music. Get mad every time I played my stations, called it nigger music. Told me it would ruin me. Like she hadn't told me time and time again I was ruined already." Dee Dee had one leg drawn up so that her arm was propped on her knee, the cigarette poised just in front of her mouth. An almost empty pack was in her other hand, and there was a box of kitchen matches on the floor beside a saucer full of ashes. The radio paused, pulsed, and the music changed.
"Elvis Presley and the Jordanaires," the DJ announced, "at the fairgrounds in Spartanburg this Sunday afternoon. I'm gonna be there, you can bet on it. Now here's the man himself."
The music that had been playing softly in the background came up loud now.
"I got a woman, mean as she can be."
"I've seen Elvis now 3 times. What you think about that, bonehead? You like Elvis?"
Dee Dee looked at me almost hatefully. I shrugged. "Well enough. I ain't never seen him."
"You ain't never seen anything."
"No." Dee Dee threw the cigarette butt over the side of the porch and glared at me.
"She loved you. You know, hell of a sight more than she did me."
I said nothing. Aunt Raylene stepped through the door, pulling on her gloves.
"Dee Dee, you better take your hair down and get dressed. You should have been ready to go 30 minutes ago. Travis is already down at the funeral home."
"He's been down there all night." Dee Dee tucked her feet up under her on the rocker and put one hand over her eyes. "I sent Gray over with his good suit when I figured out he wasn't coming home."
"Well, I'm not surprised, I suppose."
Aunt Raylene touched Dee Dee's cheek lightly, and for the first time I noticed the faint stain of tears.
"It was good of you to make sure he had his suit. Now come on, girl, get up and get dressed. We ain't got no time for you to be moping on this porch."
Dee Dee's hand dropped into her lap, and she shook her head fiercely.
"I ain't going."
She licked her lips and cleared her throat.
"You understand, Raylene. I ain't gonna do this. Ain't gonna go down there and let everybody mope all over me. Mama wouldn't care, and I can cry well enough here. Dee Dee, get up."
Aunt Raylene gave the rocker a push, making Dee Dee overbalance so that she had to drop her feet to the floor to keep from falling.
"I'm not kidding around with you. You've got 5 minutes to put on your dress and shoes. You can take your hairpins out in the car." "I told you, I ain't going, and I ain't."
The slap startled me as much as it did Dee Dee. She put one hand to her face while Raylene raised her arm again.
"I said get up."
Aunt Raylene's voice was soft but perfectly clear. "I just ain't gonna have this. Tonight or tomorrow, I'll talk to you about your mama. Then you can whine and bitch to your heart's content, curse and scream and do any damn thing you want. But right now, you're going to her funeral the way she would want. If you don't, 10 years from now, you're gonna hate yourself for missing it. And I damn sure am not gonna let that go by. So get your butt up out of that chair and wash your face before I slap you, silly." Dee Dee hesitated, her mouth hanging open, and Raylene drew her hand back. Immediately, Dee Dee was up and into the house. We heard the water running briefly and then her feet on the stairs. Aunt Raylene sighed and pushed a few stray hairs back behind her ears. She looked over at me carefully.
Go get in the car, she said.
We ain't got time for no more nonsense.
They had let Earl out of the county farm early so he could go to Aunt Ruth's funeral. He showed up at the funeral home drunk, wearing a brand new dark suit with his old work boots, and hanging on to the arm of a ridiculously young and skinny girl no one had seen before. I was out front standing with Raylene and Alma when we saw him coming up the steps. He gave me one quick nod, but kept his attention on his sisters. When Raylene snorted at him, he told the girl to go wait in his truck.
Don't get snotty, Raylene, he said as the girl walked away. That child is the only thing keeping me alive.
And what are you doing for her?
Everything I can, sister. Everything she wants.
You marry her, then?
Aunt Alma looked tired and impatient. I'm going to. Hell yes, I am. I surely am.
Goddamn, Earl, you fool. One of your women gonna have you put in jail one of these days.
Ain't no woman ever gonna put me in jail.
Earl swayed a little on his old boots.
Ain't no woman would dare.
Aw, Earl. Raylene shook her head at him and shrugged. She folded her big arms around his shoulders and pulled him to her breast.
I'm just glad you're here.
When she let him go, she smiled for the first time since Ruth had died.
That child buy you that suit? Why, don't you like it?
Earl ran his hands down the sides of his suit coat. He was so thin that when he bent his arms, the dark material flapped like a crow's wing. His hair was still bristly short and close to his head, but dark again, as if he'd dyed it. He only looked like himself when he grinned in embarrassment.
Don't you think she got me a good one? It's good enough, especially since you didn't have to pay for it.
Beau was wearing his best dark suit, but it didn't fit him too well. He kept lifting one shoulder and then the other, trying to settle himself more comfortably. The smell of whiskey clung to him. But he looked more sober than he had in years. Sober, irritable, and so nervous he was chewing on his lower lip.
Why the hell we just standing around here?
He turned to Raylene as if she were in charge.
This funeral should have been over 2 days ago, and now we're standing on these steps like we ain't never gonna put Ruth in the ground.
Beau!
Alma looked disgusted.
Don't talk like that. The kids will hear you.
Raylene's voice was soft and neutral. We're waiting 'cause Travis asked us to wait.
He's hoping Tommy Lee, Dwight, and DW will get here and go out to the grave with us. Hell, those boys ain't coming. Nobody's even seen Tommy Lee in 2 years. And last I heard, DW was on his way to California.
Beau cleared his throat and spit.
Travis isn't using his head.
No, he ain't. Raylene continued in that flat, soft tone.
And you wouldn't either in his place. Ruth wanted all her children to come home, and Travis has just been trying to do everything the way she wanted. Give him a few more minutes, and the funeral director will get him moving. I don't want you saying nothing to Travis. I wasn't gonna say nothing to Travis.
Beau looked indignant.
I ain't a fool. Come on, Beau.
Earl put his hand on Beau's shoulder.
Come out to the truck with me a minute.
Oh, God.
Alma sounded like she was going to start yelling.
Now they're gonna both be drunk.
I don't care.
Raylene took her handkerchief out of her purse and wiped her mouth.
Beau has a drink. I know how he'll behave. I don't know that man at all when he's sober. Don't know what he'll do. But if Earl gives him a drink, he might even be able to cry. Let them take care of each other.
I saw Butch out at the gravesite, awkward in a dark suit that looked too big for him. He told me later that he had come there hours before, and watched as the gravediggers finished rigging the canopy over the big hothouse sprays and ribbon-draped wreaths and pegged it down against the wind. It was cold and gray, with no sign of rain. Just a steady, harsh wind pushing at all the flowers. There was a big heart-shaped arrangement on a stand that read Mother in cursive script. He stood near it with his hands gripped tightly in front of him.
Bone,
he whispered when I came to stand beside him.
You better get a seat.
I don't want to sit. The wind rocked the heart wreath, and we both put our hands out to steady it.
I heard you spent the summer with her.
Yeah.
I got back once to see her just before Thanksgiving. Only got to stay a few days. Sorry I never got a chance to see you.
His voice was low. We watched everyone come over and take their seats. Mama, Raylene, Alma, and Carr gathered around Granny.
I hadn't seen Granny in a long time.
She was gray-faced, empty-eyed, and slack-jawed. She looks like the doctor gave her something, I whispered to Butch.
Looks bad.
Butch agreed. His back stiffened, and he turned away for a moment to look out over the open field of low gravestones. When he turned back, I saw his mouth was clamped shut, and his eyes red-rimmed. Neville, Earl, and Beau remained at a distance, watching until the hearse pulled up and the men gathered to carry the casket to the grave. I saw that Dwight and D.W. were with the others, but there was no sign of Tommy Lee. The wind was bitter. As they carried the coffin, the men struggled to keep the flowers on top of it. The preacher dropped his papers, and little Earl ran to grab them. Patsy Ruth and Molly were sitting with Reese, Gray and Garvey behind them. Temple was sitting with her husband, right behind Mama. Most of the other seats were filled with women from Bushy Creek Baptist. When the preacher began with, "Brothers and sisters," they all nodded together. "God damn," I heard Butch mutter. "God damn."
"God damn," I agreed.
"There should have been music," I told Butch when we were back at Aunt Ruth's. He was sitting with me in the cane-back chairs Uncle Travis had put out in the backyard, reaching into his pocket and sipping surreptitiously from an almost empty little bottle of ancient age whiskey. He also had a bottle of Pabst Blue Ribbon under his chair, Neville's beer of choice, which he kept pouring into a metal coffee cup and drinking openly. I don't know how much he'd had, but he looked relaxed and comfortable, despite the cold, wearing one of Uncle Travis's old army greatcoats and a plaid wool scarf wrapped around his neck. I had borrowed Uncle Neville's fleece-lined jacket and leather gloves, and wasn't too chilled myself, but it wasn't surprising that no one else had joined us.
"What?"
Butch muttered in my direction.
"A little Carter family caterwauling? Maybe that one about building your house for the Lord?"
He snorted and began to sing a brief off-key chorus of "Will the Circle Be Unbroken." His breath came out in pale little clouds.
"You can't sing," I told him. "Hell, none of us can."
He passed me the whiskey.
"You want a sip? Might warm you up."
I said nothing, just drank deeply. I liked the taste. It was strong, a little bitter, but warming. Butch laughed gently, tipped the bottle back, and refilled his cup with Pabst.
"Don't you tell your mama now. She'd take my head off."
"Give me some." I took the cup before he could object and poured as much as I could of the beer down my throat. It tasted mild after the whiskey, but it hurt to swallow. Whether because it was so cold or that I drank such a big gulp, I couldn't have said. For all I knew, beer was supposed to hurt going down. Butch peered closely at me.
"You trying to get drunk?"
he asked. "You think I can?"
"Oh, pretty surely. But I might have to go get another couple of bottles if you want to do it up right."
"Earl's in there, too. Bet we could get some more whiskey from him or Beau."
"Whoa, Bone! Girl, you've been growing up while I've been gone, drinking beer and stealing whiskey."
I drained his cup and handed it back. "They still should have had music. Aunt Ruth loved music."
"Yeah."
Butch knocked the cup against his knuckles, making a low, hollow sound.
"Yeah, she did. Used to love to play those scratchy old records. Kept them even after D.W. broke her record player. Always planned to buy her another one, but I never seemed to have any extra money. Couple of times I borrowed Earl's record player for her, just so she could listen to it."
"Earl loaned it to her last summer while I was there. We played a bunch of her stuff." Butch smiled.
"Don't tell me. Gospel Train, right? A little Hank Williams, the Monroe Brothers, Hazel Cole, and..."
"Who was that?"
Yeah, blind Alfred Reed, right? Bet she even got out Wabash Cannonball and Where the Soul of Man Never Dies.
Pistol-packing mama. I reached under Butch's seat for the Pabst bottle, took it up, and drained it. He stared at me, unbelieving. She really loved that one. We sang it together all one afternoon. I set the empty bottle back under his chair. His face crumpled slowly.
God damn, he whispered. I forgot that one. Shit.
He dropped his head and covered his face with his hands. I watched his shoulders tighten, feeling far off and a little numb, the liquor like cotton batting all along my nervous system.
Christ damn,
Butch cursed and stood up.
I hate this.
He kicked his chair over, kicked it again, and knocked it a couple of feet away, went after it, and gave it another kick.
I didn't think I'd feel like this. When I talked to Dee Dee, we both swore we weren't gonna act like this. And there she is up in Mama's bedroom now, crying like her heart's broke, like she lost her best friend in the world, and hell.
He almost shouted, turning back to me.
She and Mama couldn't barely stand each other.
I nodded. It don't make sense, does it? I always thought Dee Dee hated Ruth. She talked so bad about her. But this morning, I paused to wipe my face. It all looked different.
God damn, you're drunk.
Butch walked over to me, tilted my face back, and put his down close to mine. His lips pressed my lips. His tongue slipped in and pushed at my tongue. I pulled my head away in surprise.
How old are you now, Bone?
He asked. I'll be 13 in May, I told him.
13, Butch nodded. I always liked you,
he whispered.
Still do. You ain't always a damn fool like everybody else.
He straightened back up.
So don't go making more out of this than there is.
I got to my feet carefully. The back of my skirt was stuck to my legs. I pulled it free with one hand and felt one of the scabs tear loose. I winced, but Butch had bent down to retrieve the beer bottle and didn't see. I went back inside, walking slowly, placing one foot deliberately in front of the other. It was kind of interesting being drunk. I liked the numb part. In the overheated house, there seemed to be no good air left. The kitchen was full of women standing around, talking and watching over the stove. Mama and Alma were sitting at the table, Alma leaning on Mama's shoulder. Carr was over at the counter, slicing ham and laying it out on a platter. Temple and Molly were with her, helping to put more food out. I didn't see Raylene anywhere. I checked the parlor, but it was full of smoke, the smell of whiskey, and men talking in husky voices. Travis was on the couch with his head fallen back, his cheeks all flushed, the veins on his nose showing blue-purple. I went down the hall, trailing my hands along each wall. This was not hard at all. As long as I moved slowly and kept my head up, there was no problem. I went into the bathroom and looked in the mirror. I was sweaty, flushed.
Sure looked drunk to me, I grinned.
It was too hot. The window over the toilet seemed to be painted closed. I straddled the toilet, pounded on the window frame until it loosened, and opened it. Cool air washed over my face. I bent down, pulled my panties off awkwardly, skirt up, and without turning around, dropped down backwards on the toilet seat. Peeing had never felt so wonderful before. I laid my cheek on the cool porcelain back of the toilet and just enjoyed the release. The door opened behind me. I pushed up, startled, and slipped, falling back down on the seat. Twisted around, I tried to push up again, but a loud, abrupt hiccup plopped me right back on the seat again. Raylene laughed.
Who slipped you a drink, Bone?
She didn't sound that angry. She pushed the door closed behind her and steadied me with one hand.
You're about falling down drunk.
No, I'm not. I only had a little.
Uh-huh, yeah.
She laughed and pulled some paper off the roll and handed it to me.
Come on, let's get you up.
Her hand was under my right elbow, helping me stand. I tried to back off the seat, but her grip held me. Aunt Raylene, I turned my head to look up at her again, ready to try and persuade her that I wasn't really drunk. Her expression stopped me. She was looking down at my panties, where they draped my left shoe, the brown stains in the seat showing clearly in the bright light. She pulled me back a little, and her left hand lifted my skirt. I tried to push it back down with my numb fingers, but she had a good grip.
Sweet suffering Jesus!
A shock went right through me. Suddenly, I was terrified, unreasonably, horribly terrified. No, I begged. No, please! But the door was open. She was pulling me out. I hung back, but she was unstoppable. She pushed me into Dee Dee's empty bedroom.
Earl! Aunt Raylene was yelling. Earl, come here! You and Beau, you come here!
No, I said it again. Please, please!
Be quiet, Bone. Ain't nobody gonna hurt you. I swear to you, ain't nobody ever gonna hurt you again.
Earl pushed through the door.
Raylene, what you yelling about? The kids are asleep upstairs and you're yelling loud enough to scare people in the next county.
Raylene whirled on him.
Shut up and look at this.
She turned me around and flipped my skirt up. I started to stutter. No, no.
Damn.
Earl's voice was soft and scarier than I could have ever imagined. I wrapped my fingers around the back of my neck, dropped my head, and shook all over.
Leave me alone, I begged.
My panties were still tangled on my left shoe.
Hush, hush.
Aunt Raylene's arms wrapped around me like a blanket. She sat on the bed and pulled me up on her lap.
Hush.
Earl was gone. The door opened again, and Neville and Beau were there.
It true?
Beau demanded.
That son of a bitch beat her bloody?
Like a dog,
Raylene told him.
Child strapped all the way down to her knees.
She pulled my panties free of my shoe and threw them at him.
I'd kill him.
She said it in a very matter-of-fact tone that made me believe her.
No,
I moaned.
Shit!
Neville's voice was barely recognizable. There was a scream from down the hall, a loud crashing noise, and Earl's voice shouting,
I'll murder you, you son of a bitch!
Neville and Beau turned together.
No,
I pleaded.
Aunt Raylene, please!
But she just held me tight. I turned, started punching her, trying to get free. Mama's arms came around me so suddenly, I almost stopped breathing.
Mama, I'm sorry, I'm sorry!
Hush, Bone.
Her voice sounded just like Raylene's had.
Just hush, baby, it's all right.
Still terrified, I clung to her. Thudding, crashing sounds were coming from the front. They had gone out on the porch. Raylene stood with her back to the bedroom door, her arms crossed over her breasts, as if she expected us to try and fight her to get out. Mama just held me and whispered again,
It's all right.
After a few minutes, Raylene came over and sat beside us.
Annie.
Her voice was husky.
Annie, did he beat you too? Tell me, did he hurt you?
Glenn would never hurt me, Raylene, you know that. Mama pressed her mouth to the top of my head. He'd never raise a hand to me. She sighed and hung her head.
Oh, Annie.
Raylene reached for Mama's hands, but Mama pulled away.
Don't touch me, don't!
Mama almost spit. She drew me closer to her. I was shaking in her arms, and she was shaking too.
Oh, God, Raylene, I'm so ashamed. I couldn't stop him, and then, I don't know.
Her head bobbed up and down. When she spoke again, her voice was fierce, desperate.
He loves her. He does. He loves us all. I don't know. I don't know. Oh, God. Raylene, I love him. I know you'll hate me. Sometimes I hate myself, but I love him. I love him.
I looked up. Mama's eyes were deep and glittery. Her mouth was open, her lips drawn back from her teeth, her neck muscles high and rigid. Her chin went up and down as if she wanted to cry, but couldn't.
I've just wanted it to be all right,
she whispered.
For so long, I've just hoped and prayed, dreamed and pretended. I've hung on, just hung on.
Mama, I whimpered and tried to push up to her.
I made him mad, I did.
Bone,
Raylene reached for me.
No,
I jerked away and pressed my face against Mama's arm.
Hush,
Hush, Mama breathed. I held still and heard Raylene's hand drop. We listened to the noises from the porch.
Those thuds were Daddy Glenn hitting the wall. Those grunts were his. Those curses were my uncle's.
I put my fingers in my mouth and bit down. I looked up. Above me, Mama's face and Raylene's were almost touching,
both of them trembling and holding on as if their lives depended on each other.
Chapter 18. Things come apart so easily when they have been held together with lies. It was that way with Mama and Daddy Glenn. Aunt Raylene offered to let us all come stay with her, but Mama wouldn't consider it. The one day Daddy Glenn spent in the hospital, she moved us into an apartment over the fish market, just a few blocks from the boarded-up windows of Woolworth's. Every morning I had to walk past those windows to get to the intersection where the bus picked us up for school. I saw the workmen replacing the shattered display windows with new plate glass panels. And one day, I saw a very harassed-looking Tyler Highgarden supervising while box after box of dime store notions was carried through the repaired doors. He never even looked in my direction, but I still felt the hair on the back of my neck rise up stiff and electrical. If everything hadn't been so confused, I might have told Mama what I'd done. But Mama and I did not talk at all. It was a two-room apartment, one bedroom and a larger room that served for everything else. The kitchen was a stove, icebox, and sink in a little alcove to the side of the bedroom door. The bathroom smelled of damp, mildew, and fish, the latter seeping up from the shop below. It was dark, with dirty windows we had to scrub repeatedly to get clean. The only cheerful thing in the whole place was the blue flowered wallpaper that set the kitchen area off from the rest of the front room. When I sat at the table to do my homework, I always faced that wallpaper. I didn't want to look at Reese, camped out in the bedroom with her coloring books and angry scowls, or at Mama, sitting wordless over on the couch, smoking, wiping her eyes, and listening to the radio. Mama had left the television set behind, left her washer, most of her furniture and dishes, and all of her knickknacks and good silverware. She had brought the sewing machine, the ironing board, our clothes, and most of hers. Since we hadn't been there to help her pack, it was hard to figure out how she had decided what to take and what to leave. And since she clearly didn't want to talk, it was impossible to ask. Reese complained about the television and her bicycle, but Mama just said she'd get us new ones in time. I didn't question her, didn't complain, barely spoke. It was my fault, everything. Mama's silence and Reese's rage. I lay in the bed with my hands clutched under my chin and my knees drawn up to my breasts. I kept remembering those last few days like a hurried, confusing dream. Not Daddy Glenn beating me, but the morning Mama told me about Aunt Ruth. Not the Woolworths robbery, but talking to Butch. And not the noise and uproar when Benny, Aunt Faye, and Aunt Carr drove off to the hospital with Daddy Glenn. But those brief, horrible moments when Aunt Raylene showed my thighs to Uncle Earl. I kept trying to figure out how I could have prevented it all from happening. Not drunk that beer, not let anyone see, gone to Mama and made sure she knew that I had deserved that beating. Kept everything smooth and quiet. That night at Ruth's, Aunt Raylene had told me not to brood, that it would take time for Mama to forgive herself. For what? I wondered. Mama hadn't done anything wrong. I was the one who had made Daddy Glenn mad. I was the one who made everybody crazy. No, Raylene told me, I wasn't to think that way. She had whispered in a rough, strained voice that Mama loved me, that she loved me, that Earl and my uncles loved me. She was insistent, holding me tight to her. But I didn't listen. I clamped my teeth together and sucked my tongue up so tight to the roof of my mouth that my throat ached. Mama was ashen and silent and wouldn't look at me. It was my fault, all my fault. I had ruined everything. Daddy Glenn showed up at the diner to try to talk to Mama,
but she balled up her apron and hid in the washroom until the manager made him leave. She came home to sit on the couch, smoke a pack of cigarettes, and stare into space. When Reese tried to talk to her, she made us both go to bed early. The next morning, when Mama went over and applied for a job at J.C. Stevens, all I could think about were the times she had told us how much she hated the mills. When Reese and I got out of school, we found a note from Mama on the dish drain that said she'd be working until 7:30 and to open a can of pork and beans for dinner. Reese ate hers spread between two layers of bread and refused to speak to me. I went down behind the fish market, where big, salt-stained flats were stacked in piles, and empty wash tubs lay tilted so they could drain and air out. I sat on an overturned wash tub between the leaning piles of flats and cried into my elbow so that no one could hear me. "It'll be all right," Mama kept telling Reese and me, but she didn't explain how. When Reese cried and said she wanted to go home, Mama held her and promised to let her stay with Patsy Ruth this summer. I sat at the table and watched them across the room, remembering the last time Mama had run away from Daddy Glenn. It had only been a few days. This was now over a week. How much longer would she last? Another week? A month? I dug my nails into the soft skin inside my elbows and rocked a little on the chair. I wouldn't cry. Not where Mama could see me. I wouldn't cry. For Reese, the whole thing had been an adventure until Mama refused to let her go over to sign her name on Uncle Wade's cast. 3 days after the funeral, Uncle Wade had shot himself in his right foot and was stuck home limping around with his leg in a big cast the boys had plastered all over with oil and gas decals from the service station. We'd heard all about it from Little Earl at school, but Mama ignored Reese's begging and brought home a couple of paint-by-number sets for us instead. "I don't want you going nowhere that I can't come keep an eye on you," she told Reese. When Aunt Raylene came over, Mama didn't even invite her inside, just spoke through the door. "Let us be, Raylene. Just let me be for a while. I need some time to think."
"Annie, you can't hide away like you some criminal," Aunt Raylene sounded impatient.
"You ain't the one done nothing wrong. You ain't the one at fault."
"I don't care who's at fault," Mama yelled. "I just need to be left alone."
Aunt Raylene called Mama's name softly twice more, but finally went slowly down the stairs and drove away. We all shared one big bed, but most nights Mama would fall asleep on the couch, one arm thrown over her face so it covered her eyes. That night, Mama lay on the couch and cried so quietly I could just barely hear her through the closed door. I curled up on the far side of the bed and listened to the small sounds of her weeping until I fell asleep and dreamed that the walls of the apartment fell away and you could see all the way out to the house where Daddy Glenn was sitting up, staring through the open windows, waiting for us to come back. When I woke up in the early dawn, I went to make sure Mama was all right. I tried to be quiet, but she was awake, lying there looking up at the dirty, gray ceiling. "Bone," she whispered. "It's too early. What are you doing up?" I hesitated. I wanted her arms around me, but I stood there rigidly, mouth shut tight, eyes dry.
"Oh, Bone,"
Mama sighed. She sat up and pulled me down beside her so that my head was on her shoulder. I began to shake with hard, mean sobs, a strange kind of crying without tears. Mama's hand moved automatically, stroking my head as if I were a wounded dog. I knew from the way she was touching me that if I had not come to her, pushed myself on her, she would never have taken me into her arms. I shuddered under that unfeeling palm, slapped her hand away, and ran for the bedroom. I crawled in beside Reese and pulled the pillow over my head. Reese woke up complaining, and when Mama came in, I just scrunched down tighter, refusing to answer when she called my name.
"Bone, don't do this," she said,
her voice angry and impatient. I burrowed deeper into the sheets. After a little while, Mama said,
"That's enough,"
and took Reese away.
My head pounded with heat. Lying alone on the big bed, I thought about Daddy Glenn and the way he would come up behind me and gather me up in his arms to pull me close to his body. Remembering, I locked my hands between my legs and tightened every muscle in my body. When I was as hard and rigid as I could make myself, I tried to remember how it had started. What was it I had done? Why had he always hated me? Maybe I was a bad girl. Evil, nasty, willful, stupid, ugly. Everything he said. Maybe I was. But it didn't matter. I hated him. And these days I even hated Reese and Mama. I was a bowl of hatred, boiling black and thick behind my eyes. I had been so proud of not crying that last time, so sure it was important. Why had it mattered? Whether I screamed or fought or held still, nothing changed. I curled up tighter still and thought about that. The way he beat me. The way I felt jammed against him and struggling. The smell of him and the feel of his sex against my belly. He had been pinning me against his thigh when he beat me. Had he come? Had he been beating me until he came in his trousers? The thought made me gag. I pushed my wrists harder and harder against my own sex until I was hurting myself. I could remember his smell, the sound of his breath above me, the hot sweat falling off his face onto my skin, the way he had grunted and shaken me. No, it did not matter whether I had screamed or not. It had all been the way he wanted it. It had nothing to do with me or anything I had done. It was an animal thing, just him using me. I rolled over and bit the pillow. I fell into shame, like a suicide throws herself into a river. After a while, I cried myself back to sleep. I dreamed I was a baby again, 5 or younger, leaning against Mama's hip, her hands on my shoulders. She was talking, her voice above me like a whisper between stars. Everything was dim and safe. Everything was warm and quiet. She held me, and I felt loved. She held me, and I knew who I was. When I put my hand down between my legs, it was not a sin. It was like her murmur, like music, like a prayer in the dark. It was meant to be, and it was a good thing. I woke up with my face wet from tears I did not know I had cried, my hands still holding on between my legs. "Mama," I whispered, but she had gone to work. I was alone in the quiet bedroom. It had been a long time since I had woken up like this, with that sweet, good feeling between my legs, almost hurting me, but comforting, too. I brought my hands up and looked at them, spread the fingers and looked at the light reflected through the dingy shades. I rolled over and slowly loosened the muscles of my back and legs, keeping my hands in front of my face. The light shifted as the shades swung in the breeze. I thought about fire, purifying, raging, sweeping through Greenville and clearing the earth. I dropped my hands and closed my eyes. "Fire," I whispered. "Burn it all." I rolled over, putting both my hands under me. I clamped my teeth and rocked, seeing the blaze in my head, haystacks burning and nowhere to run, people falling behind and the flames coming on, my own body pinned down and the fire roaring closer. "Yes," I said, "yes." I rocked and rocked and orgasmed on my hand to the dream of fire. When I woke up, it was afternoon, and the apartment was still and warm. I got up carefully. There was cold coffee on the stove and biscuits in a towel-wrapped dish. I drank some coffee and chewed on a biscuit with a slice of cheese. A note in Mama's handwriting was on the table. "Don't go anywhere," it read. "I'll be home by dark and we'll talk." My throat closed up. I didn't want to talk to her. I didn't know what I would say. I dressed myself quickly in jeans and a warm cotton shirt. When I left, I locked the door behind me. Once I was on the street, I thought about Reese coming home to an empty apartment and calling Mama at work. They'd be upset. Angrily, I started walking. I didn't care anymore who got mad at me, what happened. Maybe I'd get killed out on the highway. It had been Faye, Neville's wife, who had driven Daddy Glenn to the hospital after getting him up off the lawn and on his feet again.
"He ain't gonna die,"
she had said,
"but a doctor should look at him. That cut over his eye might need a stitch or two."
Aunt Carr and Benny went with them. "You should always give a man a chance," she said before she got in the car. Earlier, she'd been the one who tried to stop the beating and gotten slapped for her trouble.
"My wife's getting ready to drive, ain't she? And in my car?"
Neville's voice was laconic and soft.
"She wouldn't be if I was giving that son of a bitch a chance."
He was drinking black coffee out of a soup bowl, his knuckles all bloody and swollen, like Earl's and Beau's. Beau had managed to get kicked in the mouth and had lost a tooth. He was collapsed in a chair, threatening to knock all Glenn's teeth out as soon as he could stand to punch him again. Through it all, Daddy Glenn said nothing. His face was blood-streaked and bruised, and he could barely stand. But he didn't make a sound when Benny helped him into the car. He just put one hand over his eyes and lay back against the seat. Aunt Carr brought his coat.
"You should be ashamed,"
she hissed at Earl as she went through Aunt Ruth's living room.
"Well, I'm not."
Earl had a bottle of Jack Daniels and was passing it over to Beau between sips.
"I'm not ashamed of beating that asshole. I'm not ashamed of sitting here drinking. I'm not ashamed of a damn thing."
He sat at the table with Beau and Neville, all of them sweaty and bruised, drunk and indignant. None of them looked at me when I came through with Mama and Raylene, though Earl stumbled up and put his arms around first Mama, then me. He smelled like blood, a copper and iron tang on top of the whiskey. I pushed at him, trying to get free, but he seemed not to notice, letting me go only when Mama pulled me out of his embrace.
"We're going," she told him.
Raylene and Neville followed us out to the Pontiac, Raylene repeating,
"You should come to my place,"
and Mama never stopping to acknowledge the suggestion. It was dark and cold, and Reese was shivering. Aunt Alma brought out a couple of blankets.
"We should talk," she said. "You're gonna need some help, Annie, and you shouldn't go back to that house alone."
Neville nodded. Raylene said,
"Annie, just listen to us."
But Mama wrapped one blanket around Reese and handed the other to me. She kept putting one hand up, palm out, when either of her sisters got too close.
"No," she said once. "Don't stop me. I know what I've got to do."
We'd slept the night in the car while Mama rummaged through our house, packing up the things she wanted and storing them in the trunk. She put boxes behind the front seat and piled sheets and quilts on them to make the back seat one big bed. Before dawn, she drove us down to the train station lot and parked the car under one of the big arc lights. She slept in the front seat with pillows and blankets around her. When daylight came, she took us to a diner downtown and left us to eat our breakfast while she went to rent the apartment she had already picked out from the ads in the paper. She had been moving so fast, so steadily. It was impossible to talk to her, to ask her what was happening. But I could not have asked anyway. I knew. It took me most of the day to walk to Aunt Raylene's. I walked with the same pace, the same deliberate energy I had seen in Mama since Aunt Ruth's funeral. I sang to myself as I walked, sometimes out loud. Ruth Brown's, "Mama, He Treats Your Daughter Mean." Patsy Cline's, "Walking After Midnight." Out at the intersection of White Horse Road and the Eustace Highway, I even started on Elvis Presley. Singing kept me from crying. Singing kept me walking. The spirit of meanness that had come up in me broke out in song and movement. I felt hateful, but strong, mean, but powerful. Aunt Raylene didn't seem that surprised to see me when I walked up her front steps. She was on the side porch, where she had set out flats to start seedlings. Her hands were covered in dirt, her hair tied back with a scarf, and she had a streak on one cheek.
"Bone," she said briefly,
and went on mixing black dirt and potash.
"Ain't seen you in a while."
I wiped my face. Sweat was running down my neck. My feet hurt. I dropped onto a stool.
"Get yourself a glass of something out of the kitchen,"
Aunt Raylene said, but I didn't move. After a while, the dry, tight feeling in my throat eased. I watched her spread the dirt out in her flats and layer fertilizer in each. She mixed again and again.